Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Halfway through the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, this segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or visit their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program from the Winnipeg Sun, Ted Wyman. Ted, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Doing very well, Ted. How's beautiful New York City?
Oh, it is exactly what you just said. It's beautiful today, perfect sunshine. I'm in the hotel lobby and looking out at Madison Square Garden and looking forward to another Jets game tomorrow night right here.
Yeah, not a bad place to spend a bit of an off day. Ted obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets. We'll talk about the road trip. We'll talk about the season so far. We got to go back to Detroit last night. A tremendous Jets victory showing that perseverance we've seen from the team so much this year. Battling back in the third period, getting that game-winning goal from Brandon Tanev. What were your takeaways from last night's Jets victory over the Red Wings?
Well, first of all, I think you just can't discount these wins and call any of them fluky anymore because they just keep doing it, you know. You beat Carolina at home, you beat Toronto at home, that's one thing. These last two games, they come back with three in the third to earn a point against Washington, and then they come back with four in the third to get the win in Detroit. And I believe they've outscored the opposition 9-2 in the third period in the last three games. That is really impressive. They have played so well in those third periods, and you just sort of wonder, you can't help but say, you know, what if this team could start putting together 60 minutes and not having such bad second periods? You know, what kind of potential would it have then?
You know, Ted, we got to talk about Nikolaj Ehlers. He had one goal and three assists yesterday. He was playing on that top line with Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine, who also had a goal and an assist. But Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, Dave and I talked about it during the first hour. He's just been fantastic here. There's no worries of a sophomore slump here. Are you surprised that he's been this good this early for the Jets?
I think he's just been outstanding all season. You could see it right from the very beginning with his skating, his puck handling, his confidence to make moves at the blue line, you know, little backward skating twists and turns that and holding on to the puck. And just, you know, you can just tell that he's a very confident player right now. And really emerging. And, you know, last night was just one of those games where it just seemed that he could do no wrong. He just had a terrific hockey game. And I loved his answer at the end of the game when he was asked what it was like to get 4 points in an NHL game. And he said, well, it's not bad. I could get used to it. And then he gave a little laugh. You know, I mean, he's really confident and really enjoying himself.
Ted, going back to the Washington game, obviously the Coach Maurice was not happy about the OT, too many men on the ice penalty, called it what he called it. And then you spoke to him the next day and he wasn't backing down from it. What was your general sense from the coach about the controversy?
Oh, he just didn't think it was a too many men penalty. I've seen it numerous times. There was clearly five players on the ice, and I guess what it comes down to is it's a judgment call by the linesman as to whether or not the players coming onto the ice had an effect on the play. And I guess Paul doesn't really think that they did. And so he just thinks it was a terrible time to call a penalty and very costly for the Jets. But, you know, the Jets had gotten hemmed into their own zone for 2 minutes with Bufflin and Wheeler looking like they could barely even lift their legs. And at that point, you know, they got stuck on the ice. And there was a whole lot of things went wrong, not just the too many men on the ice, but yeah, Paul Maurice was pretty funny about the whole thing because, as you know, he had his famous line that we can't repeat on the radio, and he followed that up yesterday and said that, you know, maybe the question, and I was the one that asked.
I was
going to
say, you were the question asker, if I recall correctly.
Maybe the question put the wrong words in his mouth, but he had a bit of a grin on his face when he said that, so it was all pretty good. And he says he hasn't heard anything from the NHL yet about it, so You know, maybe saying things like that aren't as big a deal as we think.
Ted, were you as surprised as I when he said that he hasn't received a letter? Like, you'd think in this day and age he'd at least get an email.
Yeah, he seemed to, he said that normally you don't. Those were his exact words. And then he said, you know, maybe I'll get a letter at some point and a fine. But he didn't, you know, he wasn't too worried about it, that's for sure.
Ted Wyman, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ted's on the Jets road trip. Covers the Jets, of course, for the Winnipeg Sun. He's the Winnipeg Sun sports editor. Ted, you know, we know about the litany of injuries the Jets have suffered, both, you know, to some defensemen, but more so up front to their forwards. Yet they don't seem to, they haven't seemed to miss a beat as of yet. Is it sort of just, can you chalk that up to maybe youthful exuberance and just not knowing that they should be in trouble with all these injuries?
Yeah, that's kind of a good way to put it, because you can say that about a lot of things with this team. I think they, you know, they probably don't know that they're not supposed to come back in the third period mm-hmm. every night. And they don't know that you can go 2 weeks without practicing in the National Hockey League. You know, like, this has been a very, very weird time for any NHL player. And these young guys are experiencing it, and really, maybe they don't know what it's really like in the league, because it's just not like this usually. But I think they've, you know, you look at the depth of the organization, and you look at the character of that team, and those are the two things that stand out the most to me in this season so far, because they have showed a tremendous amount of both of those things. The character to keep coming back, they keep having these great third periods, and to just believe in themselves in the dressing room when they're, you know, they're down two, they're down three, they're down one. They seem to have, you know, gained this confidence that they know they can come back on anybody. And you guys know from watching this team for 5 years before this, that never happened. So this is a completely different situation in that way. And then you have to really respect the depth that they've managed to put together, because you bring up Andrew Kopp and Mark O'Dano and Nick Petan, and they fit right in, and the Jets do just fine. So, hard to believe that they've been able to weather the injuries that they the way they have, but that's what you get from long-range planning.
Ted, we watched the game on TV last night. Unfortunately, we weren't able to be in Detroit, but you were in Detroit at Joe Louis Arena. What was it like to be in the arena for the Gordie Howe tribute with Gordie Howe's children there, Mark, Marty, Murray, and Kathy, and just to be in that building knowing that that was the last Jets regular season game ever to be played there?
Yeah, and it was my first game there, so my first and last, all in one. You know, really a great atmosphere in that building. You'd always know that the people of Detroit love hockey. You don't get a name Hockey Town without having people that care, and they were loud, they're exuberant, they understand the game. It's that's a fun place to be, to watch a game, and, you know, it's obviously an antiquated building. The press box in there is you know, widely known to be one of the worst in the league, and so you get a you know, not the greatest impression of it when you're sitting up there, but they certainly are excited about moving to a new building, and it's downtown closer to Ford Field and Comerica Park, and I think there's going to be a more lively area there. It's probably going to be great for Detroit all in all, but hey, this is 3 years in a row for me where I've been to buildings in the year that they were closing. First was Nassau Coliseum in Long Island. Last year was Rexall Place in Edmonton, and now this one. And I'll miss all these places. I love the old buildings.
You know, Ted, what can you say about the leadership that Blake Wheeler is displaying, both on and off the ice?
Just he's been fantastic. And if you ask Paul Maurice the same question, he'd say the exact same answer. I think that what you've seen with this team is with these third period comebacks, and you know, they're only 5-6-1, but they've you know, it's been a pretty decent start to the season considering all things for this team. I think that they are doing it with an incredible work ethic. They are working so hard in those third periods. They're outworking everybody. And when you've got a captain who's the hardest working player on the team, whether it's a game or a practice, that really sets the bar for you. And then you look like guys like Brandon Tanev and Nikolaj Ehlers, who are doing the same thing, and you say, well, they're following their leader. And I think that has so much to do with when the Jets are successful. That's such a big part of it.
Ted, one other question I had for you was about the whole Hockey Town and Connor Hellebuck and, you know, Kyle Connor, both those guys from Michigan, very close to Detroit. And I could hear it in the audio, you know, after the game, how happy, you know, Connor Hellebuck specifically was about, you know, playing in Joe Louis Arena for the first time, getting the win, playing in front of friends and family. Can you speak to how, I mean, you were around those guys yesterday, what it meant for those young players to play in Joe Louis Arena?
Yeah, we didn't get a chance to talk to them before the game because there was no game day skate. And you know, but Andrew Kopp is from the area.
Andrew Kopp too.
Connor Hellebuck's from Detroit area. Kyle Connor's from the Detroit area. I think it meant a ton to those guys. And you could really, I thought Hellebuck played with played a really strong game. He ended up giving up 3 goals, which is kind of the norm for the Jets these days. But he was really solid. And I thought, looking back to the first period when it was 1-0 for the Red Wings, and Darren Helm had that breakaway, and Hellebuck made such a big save off of him, looked really calm there. And I think that really helped the Jets calm down. They were getting outshot by 10-1 or something at the time, and they really settled in around that 8-minute mark of the first period and played very well the rest of the way. And I thought Hellebuck was a big steadying influence back there.
And, Ted, Jacob Trouba looked really good in front of his home state as well.
Oh, can we leave that one alone?
We'll leave it alone for now. I'm going to ask you about Trouba coming up in a couple seconds here, Ted, though. Not to be the one who, the bearer of bad news, over top of victory for the Jets.
You usually are, Drew.
I know I usually am. How short is Alex Burmistrov's rope getting to be with head coach Paul Maurice?
Well, you guys know how many players are injured right now.
Yeah.
How many forwards there aren't on that team right now. And if you're going to take one guy out of the lineup when any of Drew Stafford, Sean Matthias, or Brian Little comes back, it has to be Burmistrov, in my opinion. He just has not played well. He has not looked like an NHL player a lot of the time. I think that he's made some very questionable decisions, and he's just generating no offense. So I don't see how you can make any other decision. I don't see why you would leave him in and not have Andrew Kopp in the lineup, or leave him in and not have Marco Dano in the lineup. Those guys have jump, and they're just, I think they were playing very well with the Moose, and I think they can transition into being helpful with the Jets.
Ted, we'll let you go on this last question. I said, we haven't had an opportunity to speak to you about the Jacob Trouba saga as it's unfolded all summer and then the start of the year. We're less than a month away from when there will definitely be a decision made one way or the other. How do you foresee the next, 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks playing out with regard to Jacob Trouba?
Oh, I'm sure it's going to be a load of fun for Kevin Cheveldayoff, isn't it?
That's why he gets paid the big bucks.
This has been an ugly situation since, I guess, last May for Jacob Trouba and the Jets, and they're coming down to it here. Trouba's going to have to make a decision because it doesn't look at all like the Jets are going to blink. I think that's the right decision. I think the Jets know what they have in this asset, and they want to hold on to him. They don't want a player who they've developed to just be able to force his way out of town. There's precedent to be set here. And there's value to the team going forward because they are thin, pretty thin on defense. That's one area where things aren't great with this team, and it's not great with the depth of this team in the organization. So they want to have Jacob Trouba back here. And unless somehow they see that perfect trade for another defenseman who can step in and play those kind of minutes, I think they're just going to keep sitting and doing what they've been doing. And it will be up to Trouba whether he's going to go and sit this season out and lose a year of of his contract negotiability, and then they're going to have to and then he's going to have to decide if he wants to come back and play for the Winnipeg Jets and just suck it up and accept reality. And I could see that as being the way that it's going to go, but it's just it's hard to know just how firmly dug into the sand Overhart and Jacob Trouba are. Maybe they think there's a little bit of leverage with the expansion draft. If they did sit out, would the Jets still have to protect them, and would they want to do that? But that's the only leverage I see them having. So the most likely scenario to me is that he's going to sign and come back and play.
Ted Wyman covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. He's the Winnipeg Sun sports editor. He joins us from New York City as the Jets and the Rangers will do battle tomorrow evening, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Ted, appreciate your time this morning. Go take a walk around Central Park for us.
It's been a pleasure, and I promise I will do that.
Take care, Ted. Thanks very much.
Bye, guys.
Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun. Let's head to break. When we come back, we discuss another agent causing some trouble for another NHL franchise. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Carlson, then back in. And it hit a chink of the boards right around the corner. Angle denied by Halak. A favorable bounce for the Capitals.
The bounces are strange, strange bounces sometimes. But the reaction of the goaltender was strong. And so we're tied at one.
By Yaroslav Halak. Still, as of 10 minutes to 11 o'clock on this Saturday morning, a member of the New York Islanders, much to the consternation of his agent, Alan Walsh. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10 minutes before the top of the hour. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Alan Walsh, his comments earlier this week about the Islanders' goalie situation. And if you're not aware, what it is that the Islanders have three goalies on their active roster. A rare occurrence in this day and age in the NHL. So what happens is Alan Walsh, who represents actually two out of those three goaltenders, goes on Twitter. Alan is, of course, a proficient tweeter.
He likes to block people, too.
Yeah.
I think he's blocked me.
A proficient tweeter with a bit of a thin skin, which isn't a great combination, goes out and he blasts the Islanders for the current three-goalie situation. Quote, biggest issue using a three-goalie system is goalies don't get enough practice time to stay sharp, Alan Walsh tweeted last Saturday. The starting goalie for the New York Islanders' last game had only one quality practice in the last 5 days before the Penguins game, going on 2 years of this now. Do you think that this is as big of an issue as Alan Walsh is making it out to be? Do you think this benefits his clients at all? You know, is he in the right? Is he in the wrong? Is he just doing what his clients want him to do?
I have no idea what he's doing, Drew. I mean, is it right or wrong? I have no idea. I mean, when you look at the New York Islanders right now, they certainly have not got off to a good start, I should say. Our good friend Andrew Ladd is certainly not off to a good start with his first year of his 7-year contract. But, you know, we should mention that you mentioned that it's, you know, not common to have three goaltenders on your 23-man active roster, and that is true, you know. But we should also mention that only two goalies have actually played in games. Jean-Francois Berube has not played in a game yet in the regular season.
But the Islanders won't put him through waivers because they know he'll get claimed.
Right,
is their thinking.
Right, and he's one of their, you know, young up-and-coming goaltenders. I believe he's 25 years old.
Yes.
But you know, you talk about Thomas Greiss and Yaroslav Halak guys. I mean, the unfortunate thing for the Islanders, Dave, is the team is coming off of a very impressive playoff run. They got to the second round and unfortunately weren't able to get out of the second round, but you know, that was the first time the Islanders had been in the second round in a very long time. And you lose Franz Nielsen, you lose Kyle Okposo, you lose Matt Martin, and you know, you replace those guys with Andrew Ladd, and they went out and they acquired Jason Chimera. But the goaltenders are the same as last year, and both goaltenders have had varying degrees of success, and both goaltenders have struggled at times. Halak's played 7 games. Greiss has played 5 games. Numbers are pretty similar, but the team isn't getting enough scoring, and the defense hasn't been very good. So, I mean, Alan Walsh, I think, is sure he's advocating for his clients here, but how many times have we seen Alan Walsh just get into the – stick his nose, you know, in the middle of a situation and then just, you know, bring confusion? So I don't know exactly what he's trying to accomplish here. Well, I do know what he's trying to accomplish. I don't know if he's going to accomplish it. I think Jack Capuano is going to continue to rotate goaltenders. And, Drew, if one goaltender plays significantly better than the other goaltender, I think he's going to go with that guy. So if Halak starts to play better, he'll go with Halak. If Greiss has a shutout and you know, he picks up a big win, maybe he'll ride him for a couple weeks. But right now, I don't think that one goaltender has shown – you know, that they have taken the bull by the horns and they're their number one goaltender. So, you know, for right now, I think Alan Walsh, what can I say? He's just being Alan Walsh.
I think this is more about JF Berube, Jean-François Berube, than it is about Yaroslav Halak. Halak has is making $4.5 million this year. He's got under contract for another year at $4.5 million. Yep. Berube is an RFA after this season. If he doesn't get into enough games this year, he can become an unrestricted free agent. He's only making $675,000. So I think Alan Walsh is probably looking out for his...
He wants him to play in the AHL at least.
I think he just wants him to be able to prove that he's got potential. And so that if he becomes an unrestricted free agent or whatever his next contract, you know, when he's negotiating his next contract, he at least has a body of work to show whatever team he might be negotiating with that, you know, because right now, how could you offer Jean-François Berube anything other than, you know, a contract in and around $675,000? You've never seen him do anything on ice. You've never seen him play in a game for much of the last 2 years. So I understand where the frustration is coming from. And I'm always curious about what this does for players and their relationship with a team to have their agent be so vocal.
Right, and you know, Dave might know more about this. He follows the AHL more closely than we do, but he only played 5 games last year with the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. I'm not sure why they don't want to send him down to the AHL right now if they feel that, you know, they have a better option in net right now. But I get it from that perspective, Drew, that Alan Walsh wants his goaltender to play. I mean, you can't show anything and you can't advance your NHL career if you're not playing. But certainly there might be something there that we don't know about. But again, Alan Walsh should just let the coach and the general manager handle that. I think this is, again, him getting in the middle of something and just confusing the situation.
Capuano took the high road. He said, I like Alan. He's a nice guy. He's a good guy kind of thing. Like he didn't really want to get into the mix with it. And look, Walsh is clearly just going to bat for his client. And
right.
I would suspect, and I don't know, I don't have any inside knowledge on this, but I would suspect that he advises his clients as to whatever tactic he's planning on taking.
Well, let me interrupt you right there. This is from Elliot Friedman's 30 Thoughts. A few years ago, Elliot asked an Alan Walsh client what he thought of Alan Walsh's Twitter missives. The client, who in this case was Patrick Elias, said, quote, "Do you think he'd do any of it without the player knowing first?"
Okay, so that confirms what I'm saying, right? So that's essentially saying that the players are always advised, which of course can now work against them if, you know, you're the rest of the teammates and you're saying, well, hold on a second, we're supposed to be this is a team game and you have your agent out there and you know that your agent's out there, you know, so it's a double-edged sword for that client potentially, because while he's doing it for their benefit, you know, it makes it look a little individualistic. And, you know, we even, you know, just taking it quickly to Trouba, you see on one hand, guys will say, look, you know, he's got to do what he's got to do to earn himself a contract. But on the other hand, you know, when he's not here, he's not playing, there's a little bit of a, well, we want guys who want to be here mentality. So it's a double-edged sword for Walsh's clients because, yes, it's good because you may ultimately get what you want, but it's negative if it's out there and it's understood that, you know, you know that your agent is doing these things, and it's kind of under, if your agent's doing them, that means that you've agreed to allow him to do that. So it could unnecessarily reflect negatively on the client.
Chris Gibson right now is the starting goalie for the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. He's undefeated. He was originally a Leafs draft pick. They got him in the Michael Grabner trade. So I don't know. I guess they feel that, Jean-François Berube is not going to be the number one goaltender in Bridgeport.
Well, they're worried that they're going to lose him, that they don't want to lose him for nothing by putting him through waivers. Yet they can't. Nobody's going to send you an asset for him via a trade because you haven't seen him play over the last 2 years. I mean, and the problem is nobody wants to trade for Yaroslav Halak because he's making $4.5 million this year and next year, and his performance hasn't been good enough to warrant him earning that amount of money.
They're going to have to either trade one of their goaltenders or place Jean-François Berube on waivers and knowing that he might get picked up, because I don't think you can have 3 goaltenders up there the whole year.
Well, I mean, it's been 2 years now, or it's into its second year now, so you do begin to wonder, at one point in time, do the Islanders just say, you know what, this is the situation, we're going to do what's best, what we think is best for the New York Islanders organization, and unless somebody wants to make us an offer for either Halak or Berube, they're going to have to live with this situation.
Remember, bringing it back to Winnipeg, at the start of the year, there was talk of the Jets potentially keeping 3 goaltenders up because of the potential of, you know, do they want, if it was going to be Hutchinson, do they want to take the chance to lose Hutchinson if he was sent down?
Right.
Right. Or, you know, I guess in theory, Pavlik as well, and obviously Hellebuck could go down without fear of claim. But the fact is that it isn't entirely outside the realm of possibility. I mean, Maurice acknowledged that, while not ideal, it's something he would consider. And obviously Capuano in New York says, okay, I'm prepared to do this. And again, clearly they don't want to lose this guy. He's had very good AHL numbers. Obviously he didn't play much last year. But the two previous seasons, he had almost 30 wins. He had almost 40 wins in 2014-15 when he played within the Kings AHL franchise. And so his AHL numbers are very good. They clearly see something in this kid as a future goaltender for the team. And what I'm just quickly reading on just some of the NHL.com things, links, it essentially says that it looks like the team wants to get rid of Halak. It looks like Walsh is trying to force the team to get rid of Halak. So, but then again, we see what happens when agents go vocal.
It doesn't always work out well. Arthur Staple of Newsday Newspaper joins us. We'll talk more about the Islanders. We'll talk about Andrew Ladd's performance this year. We'll talk about the bad ice at the Barclays Center. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Arthur Staple. Arthur covers the New York Islanders for Newsday Newspaper. Arthur, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
How you doing, guys?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Not too bad.
That's good. Second time in 3 years, Arthur, you're going to be able to spend New Year's Eve in Winnipeg. How'd you get so lucky?
I don't know. I've been telling my friends how lucky I am, and I can only imagine that it's going to be a delightful weather experience. And unfortunately, the way things are going with the Islanders, I don't know how good a game it'll be, but that's secondary to all the fun I'm going to have up there.
We're going to talk to you about the on-ice performance about the Islanders coming up in a moment. But before we do that, I just want to ask you the question about the ice at Barclays Center, because we know that's been a topic of conversation around the league for at least the past couple weeks, probably behind the scenes for the past couple years. You know, who's to blame for this situation? Is it, you know, ownership of the Islanders? Is it Barclays Center management? Is it the NHL for letting it, you know, fester for this long? And how big of a frustration level is there among the Islanders players?
You know, as far as assigning blame, I think it's really a combination of bad timing and, you know, a little stubbornness on all sides. I think, you know, Barclays, when they originally designed their building, they didn't have a hockey team to plan for as a tenant. So they saved some money by putting in the plastic PVC ice-making pipes as opposed to steel. And obviously the footprint of the building is designed for basketball and not for hockey. That's why they have the obstructed view seats. So lo and behold, after they built it, they suddenly get an NHL team and already have a building up and running that's got lots of events in it. So they're not ready to shut it down for a couple months and replace the pipes and do too much about the seating. So, you know, I think the new ownership of the Islanders is trying to figure out a way to you know, alleviate some of the problems for the players, but those are really mostly small fixes. The big fix would be shutting the building down for 60 days, I think is what they said, and replacing the pipes, which I think was done in Winnipeg last year. They were the last building that had the PVC pipes, and they replaced them. And so now it's kind of a situation where the building and the team and the league are all kind of trying to do as much as they can, but there's not a whole lot to be done. And I think the players certainly don't love it, but as I've, you know, you talk to them when they're not frustrated coming off a loss or a night when the ice is extremely bad, and they'll all say, we've been in Toronto, we've been in LA, we've been in Florida. You know, when you play a game after another event the night before, the ice is always bad. So they're trying to, you know, I think at this point they're done talking about it. They're trying to be a little bit more philosophical and just realize this is the way it's going to be, and it doesn't seem like it's going to change anytime soon.
Arthur, it's still early in the season here, but Andrew Ladd has no goals and one assist in 11 games. He was the big free agent signing for the New York Islanders back on July 1st. Why do you think he struggled so much?
That is an excellent question. If I had the answer to that, I think I might be making some of that $5.5 million a year. But he was brought in to essentially replace Kyle Pozo in the lineup, in the locker room. They put an A on his sweater right away. I think they like what he had to offer and what he brought to the table on the ice and off the ice. They put him immediately with John Tavares, and both of them kind of got off to slow starts offensively, not without quite a few chances, but then after five or six games, the chances started to dwindle. So Ladd moved off of that line, and he's kind of bounced around since then. And, the frustration seems to be piling up. He had a couple of plays in the game against Toronto the other night last weekend, two-on-ones where he passed, and whoever he was on the two-on-one with was kind of surprised that he passed. And I think people are just sort of waiting for him to do something to break out of it. And I know that that's not really, he's not like an individual super skilled guy. I think he's a guy who feeds off other people and fits well with other players. And it seems like if he's not playing with Tavares, that's going to be harder and harder to do. But really, the Islanders have so few forwards that have been going well to start this season, it's hard to try to focus just on getting him going. So yeah, it's been a puzzler, and obviously there's not a lot to be done except wait for it to break out. There's 6 years and 70 plus games left on this contract, and he's certainly not going anywhere now.
Arthur, the Islanders were in Nassau Coliseum since 72, and obviously they transitioned over to Barclays. What's the transition been like for the fan base?
It's been rough. I think Long Island is a lot bigger place than people who don't live in the area think, and when you had the building that's there's two counties out there, Nassau and Suffolk County, and Suffolk County extends out pretty far to the east, from New York City. It's a couple hours by train or by car at times with no traffic if you live way out east. So that having a building halfway out or a third of the way out on Long Island, allowed a lot more fans out there to be able to go. Everyone had to get there by car. So I think there's people who live close to the train lines where they can get right to Barclays. There's a stop right there on the Long Island Railroad. So I think that has made a few fans happy, and they brought in some newer fans. I think people who work in the city who couldn't get to weeknight games out on Long Island because of the traffic in the area, and now they can go right downtown Brooklyn to see a game. So, it's a franchise that's battered their fans around the last couple decades with owners, criminal owners, con men, no new building, a long run of futility on the ice. So what was left, I think, when they moved was a very small but passionate fan base. And just moving the team even, 30 miles to the west upset some of those hardcore fans. And it's been difficult to get them back. And, the attendance numbers have not been great early this season. They certainly haven't played anybody that you'd consider a big rival. But I think that's historically the last 10 or 15 years, these October-November games just do not sell well, whether they're at the Coliseum on a Saturday night or in Brooklyn on a Sunday night or whatever night of the week. So it's not completely different, but I think it's certainly not encouraging when the building is has 4,000 or 5,000 empty seats every night.
Arthur Staples, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the New York Islanders and their start to the 2016-17 season. Arthur, our previous segment, we spent discussing Alan Walsh's tweets about the three-goalie situation that seems to continue unabated for the Islanders. Unless they get an unexpected trade offer from one of the other rival general managers, one of the other 29 teams, is this status quo with the three goalies? Did Walsh's tweets have any bearing really on the situation? We know that Halak is supposedly now available, but with a $4.5 million price tag, he's not going to be easy to move.
Yeah, I think I think that was a little bit of a Walsh taking his unhappiness public, and then Gar Snow responding with, "Okay, you want there to be change? I'm going to offer up your big number client around," which was probably not the move that Walsh was looking for. But like you said, I think that a trade of Halak is pretty much an incredible long shot at this point. I don't know, there's too many teams that need goaltenders that could fit him under their salary cap right now and also want to be on the hook for that $4.5 million for next season. So I think it was more of a symbolic gesture of symbolic response by Garth Snow than anything more meaningful. You know, I think going into the off season, they were, it seemed like they were ready to move on from Halak. He wasn't healthy for long stretches last year. Thomas Greiss stepped in and played very well. Berube, who they picked up off waivers at the beginning of last season, and they ended up needing him with a three-goalie situation, and he, as a backup, played okay. And Greiss really carried them through the first round of the playoffs, that series win over the Panthers. And they didn't really know what they were going to get back in Halak coming off of hernia surgery in the offseason. So that World Cup experience by Halak, you know, maybe changed their minds a bit. He comes back in nominally as the number one goalie, and he's been okay. Greiss has been okay. You know, nothing has really gone very well, obviously, with their record. And Berube is really the odd man out, where he doesn't seem to have a path to getting any meaningful playing time. And at 25, 2 years of this, you'd think the first chance he gets when he's a free agent next summer, and he'll probably be a Group 6 free agent, he is going to go as far away as humanly possible from this situation. So it's a strange scenario for me that the Islanders are trying to protect this asset in Berube that they feel has a future with them, when he's not going to want to be any part of this, the future of this team, with the way that they've treated him in the past two seasons.
Arthur, the Islanders have a couple of 2015 first-rounders in the lineup right now, Anthony Beauvillier, and they've got Matt Barzal as well. Barzal's only played two games, but Anthony Beauvillier's played nine games. Are you expecting Anthony Beauvillier to stay up with the Islanders, and then Matt Barzal's going to go back to the Western Hockey League?
Well, Beauvillier is playing number 10 tonight against the Oilers, so he's, I think he's here to stay. My understanding is that with both players, they're not quite as concerned about that 10-game mark of you know, starting the contract, setting that first year up. It's more the 39-40 game mark, being on the roster to burn that first year of service time towards free agency, which is obviously a big concern for GMs with first round picks and high level players like these two guys. So Beauvillier is, I think, shown a little bit more versatility on the ice. He's played mostly wing. He's going to play right wing tonight. I think that means he'll have played all three forward spots just in the first 10 games of his NHL career. He's produced some points. He doesn't shy away from the physical stuff, and he's got some skill as well. So Barzal, he's sitting as a healthy scratch again tonight. Like I said, he's only played two of the first 11. So that would lead you to think that the best course of action for him at some point is to go back. But I don't think the Islanders are in any rush. And certainly if their offense continues to sputter, they've got to find a way to get him in the lineup just to see what he can do and try to, harness some of that offensive creativity he's brought the last couple training camps and certainly throughout his junior career.
Arthur, the Islanders have made the playoffs three of the last 6 years with Jack Capuano, or three of the 6 years, sorry, I should say. And I'm seeing you tweeted yesterday saying that the sources have said there's zero talk of a coaching change. Do you think he is on the hot seat this season? And how much of a leash do you think he has?
I certainly think, the start that they've had and the expectations that they have, that they've built over the last couple of years, he certainly shouldn't be feeling very comfortable. You always go to the idea that after six plus seasons and really with a lot of the same guys on the roster that he's had for their entire NHL careers, you always think about, is it time for a change? Are they tuning him out? Are they just not doing what they need to be doing? My understanding from when I tweeted that and wrote a little bit about it is just that they feel like, he hasn't changed as a coach. So is it a personnel issue? Is it just a execution issue, that there's still ways for this coaching staff and this group of players to turn it around and make it work? And obviously saying, on a Friday that there's zero talk of a coaching change, if you lose two more games on Tuesday, he could be out. So these things are always very fluid and completely based on results. And, they've got a dynamic Oilers team in tonight. They've got a very struggling Canucks team on Monday. If they come away with one or no points from those games going into a little two-game road trip to Florida next weekend, I do wonder if just for the sake of trying to jumpstart a season that could be lost very early on, and certainly shouldn't be with the roster that they have, that you do wonder if Garth Snow would consider making a change.
Arthur, we'll let you go on this last question. It was certainly a summer of upheaval for the New York Islanders. Franz Nielsen, Matt Martin, Kyle Okposo, guys who've been with the team for a lot of the, you know, big players in the team for the last number of years. They leave, bring in Andrew Ladd, you bring in Jason Chimera. We've spoken about Ladd's struggles. Chimera also struggling so far. You know, how much of a different team is this? Are they playing with a different identity with the changes that they made up front, particularly with the forward group? And how has it impacted John Tavares, who, of course, everyone knows becomes an unrestricted free agent after next season?
You know, I just think it's harder to hit the ground running. They've had good starts the past two seasons. I think last year it took a little bit longer to get going. But 2 years ago, when they really burst on the scene as a team that other teams had to take seriously, you know, they were playing with a level of speed and you know, possessing the puck and dominating teams in shots for versus shots against. And really, you know, I think that was part of having a very similar group of players available to them that had learned how to become a winning team, essentially. And I think they've had to relearn that this year with all the new guys coming in, which is certainly not an excuse. You have to be able to be ready. And I'm sure the World Cup with having their captain and a few other key players not around certainly didn't help get that cohesion together in training camp. But I think the alarming thing is how far they've fallen off as a possession team. They really, you know, I think their score adjusted Corsi for, you know, it's only 11 games, but they're 29th or 30th in the league. And they played a lot of close games, and really, you know, they should have a better record considering they gave up late leads, I think, three times in tied games inside of 3 minutes to go in the third period. But I think it's a lot of it is a function of not having the puck. The last two games, their transition out of their own end was very bad. They've tried to adjust that a little bit coming into this season, but I think if you factor in a little new, you know, a couple tweaks to their system, a lot of tweaks to their personnel, it takes a little bit of time, and they don't really have a lot of time left. So it's maybe a bit surprising that it's lasted this long, but they certainly have to be able to figure it out, because I don't think there's a lot they can make major changes with at this point in the season.
Arthur, you mentioned that the Islanders play the Canucks on Monday, November 7th. So can you send us a Cal Clutterbuck bobblehead?
Well, it's good that his bobblehead isn't smiling, because he had most of his teeth knocked out by Sean Couturier's stick the other night. So I don't know how the real life Cal Clutterbuck will look about as closed mouth as that bobblehead guy. But yeah, maybe we'll set a few aside and bring them for New Year's Eve. Should be a good party then if we have more bobbleheads.
Okay, you bring the bobbleheads, we'll bring the champagne. How about that?
Sounds good.
Arthur Staple covers the New York Islanders for Newsday newspaper. Arthur, really appreciate your time as always. Thanks for doing this, buddy.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
Take care, Arthur. When we come back, we look around the NHL, NHL news and notes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Past the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Daryl Lennox in town tonight. Two shows. Daryl, one of the funniest, most sought-after comedians, shows at 7:15 and 10 p.m. tonight. And just announced coming up in March, Jay Farrow from Saturday Night Live comes to Rumors March 2nd through 4th. Tickets on sale right now. You can get them at rumorscomedyclub.com.
NHL News and Notes.
NHL news and notes for this Saturday morning. A quick look around the league to see what is happening. We start here in Winnipeg, where Gary Lawless of TSN.ca and TSN 1290,
the lawman,
sent out a tweet yesterday afternoon. I'll read it verbatim. Quote, hearing the NHL Jets are gauging trade interest on forward Alex Burmistrov. Just how robust will those trade conversations be based on Burmistrov's play, his performance, not only this year, but thus far as an NHL regular?
I suspect. See that silence you're hearing right now from Ezra and I?
Yeah.
That's probably the silence that Kevin Cheveldayoff would be receiving on the other end of the line when he calls. Because I think if you're just calling about Alexander Burmistrov, there's not too many teams that are in desperate need. I mean, I think if it's in fact the case that the team is looking to offload Alexander Burmistrov, and I think what Ted said when we had him on earlier was true. I think that, you know, if there wasn't need for him right now based on health of bodies and NHL experience, that he might be sitting for a bit, which might not be a bad thing. There's crickets. Oh, the crickets.
The crickets.
Sounds
over.
Crickets.
Yeah, you know, okay. Rory's playing crickets regarding the trade interest in Alex Burmistrov.
Well, for a second there, Drew, I thought there were actually crickets in the studio.
I wouldn't surprise either.
I was like a plague of locusts. Yeah. Like, what's going on?
Locusts, you know, darkness, boils, the whole, all 10 of them.
So I think that the only way you're going to do this is as part of a package deal for Alexander Burmistrov.
Yeah, Drew, Alexander Burmistrov has one assist in 11 games here. He was a healthy scratch for one of the games. This is his fourth season in Winnipeg now. Of course, he went to Russia and played with Kazan Akbars there for a couple of years. You know, I agree with Dave. I mean, if the Jets have a full, healthy lineup, if Brian Little's back, if Drew Stafford's back, if Sean Mathias is back, Matthew Perreault, Joel Armia, is Alexander Burmistrov even in this lineup right now? Like, you look at the way that Brandon Tanev played last night. I mean, Alexander Burmistrov might be a healthy scratch at this point. So
you look at Marco Dano and Andrew Kopp. I mean, there'd be no... Alex Burmistrov has not made a case for himself to stay in the Winnipeg Jets lineup, not even when they're fully healthy, but when they get a couple bodies back. I'd be surprised if he's not the first forward out of the lineup.
Well, you know, is he going to be effective as a winger? No. So you need him to be effective as a center. And when Coach Maurice was talking about Alexander Burmistrov, sorry, he wasn't talking about Alexander Burmistrov specifically. He was talking about the Jets' center depth, and they were talking about Andrew Kopp specifically, and he was talking about where he comes in, and he says Scheifele, Perreault, Lowry, Kopp. Now, assume, of course, that you know you get Brian Little back, so it goes Scheifele, Little, maybe Perreault and Lowry, and then you have Kopp go to the wing or whatever, maybe Perreault go to the wing.
The point is Burmistrov didn't even factor into the
conversation. That's what I'm getting at. So Burmistrov becomes like your fifth or sixth center. And again, we've shown that he's not an effective winger. So, I mean, there's some things that he can do. Look, he got tar and feathered for his play when he dangled that led to that third goal last week against the Jets. When all of his teammates were yelling, dump it in, and he tried to dangle it at the blue line. And it was one too many dangles because now we're hearing this.
Yeah, Dave, and unfortunately for Burmistrov, and I know that he has a lot of fans here in Winnipeg, but it looks like he might be traded or at the very least he might be put on waivers and sent down to the Moose.
It just doesn't seem like there'd be much of an appetite for any NHL team, unless you're talking a late-round draft pick to see if you can catch lightning in a bottle with a guy who was a former...
I think there would be some interest. I mean, I don't know how much interest. I don't think there's as much interest in Burmistrov as there is in Trouba.
Well,
of course. But certainly I think Burmistrov can be an NHL player. I think he's just struggled this year. I'm not sure why exactly it is. You know, he didn't put up big numbers, 7 goals and 21 points in 81 games last year. So certainly, you know, it doesn't look like there's a spot for Burmistrov on the team, so we'll have to wait and see if he's traded here.
The truth is also is that sometimes, you know, a change of scenery does a player good, and it could be that some team takes a flyer on him and says, not the Flyers, but a flyer on him and says, you know, maybe he could be a reclamation project that they work on.
Because he's got the pedigree of being a former top 10 pick.
Yeah, and, so and you know, the interesting thing is no top 10 pick has ever busted before.
That's very clever, Dave. But that would be the only thing. And so you're talking at best from the Jets' perspective, fourth, fifth, you know, sixth round pick. I mean, there'd be no reason to give up anything higher than that unless a team completely loses their mind.
Well, I don't know. The Jets gave up a second for Devin Setoguchi. So you never know. Sometimes teams are willing to make trades.
Devin Setoguchi at least scored goals in the NHL.
That's true.
I mean, for, you know, and obviously, you know, we know the demons and some of the issues he's had and he had in his time in Winnipeg. But at least at the time, he was a bona fide NHL goal scorer. Alex Burmistrov has never shown himself to be a bona fide NHL goal scorer. The Ottawa Senators, they acquired goaltender Mike Condon from the Pittsburgh Penguins for a fifth-round pick.
Got a shutout in his first game.
Against the woeful Vancouver Canucks, but a shutout is a shutout. It's probably, you know, it's a good move from the Senators just in that they allow Craig Anderson the flexibility to be with his wife. We, of course, send our best out to her as she was diagnosed earlier this week with cancer. So it's just a move that a good organization makes to support a longtime player on their team. And Mike Condon obviously goes to a situation from where he wasn't playing in Pittsburgh with their goaltending situation back to healthy, to having an opportunity to play in Ottawa that's got a bunch of injuries and whatnot on their goaltending situation.
Yeah, you said it, Drew. And, you know, Ottawa's had a good start to the season here. By the way, I picked Ottawa to make the playoffs. I know you like that because you used to live in Ottawa. So good for Mike Condon. I mean, look at guys. Craig Anderson is going through, a hard time right now, as you mentioned, with his wife, and we do wish her all the best. But, you know, Andrew Hammond is with the Senators as well, and you had Winnipegger Chris Driedger, who was up with the Senators. Dave and I were actually on a plane with his family, little true story there, when we were going to the draft. But, you know, like you said, they need a goaltender there with Craig Anderson being with his family. And again, what else can you say? I mean, he picks up a shutout, which is great. Mike Condon, you know, struggled a little bit when he was replacing Carey Price there. Not as much as Al Montoya, by the way. Did you see the score last night?
Yeah, but, you know, he got hung out to dry by his teammates, and he's a good, loyal soldier. The Habs play a back-to-back game tonight, so you knew Carey Price wasn't going to be able to come into that game.
Yeah, 8 goals, Drew. Wow.
It was 10 goals.
Well, on Montoya, 8.
Ten on Montoya.
He stayed in the entire
game.
I thought they took him out at the end.
No, he stayed in the entire game because that was, once it was 8-0, what are you bringing Price in for at that point?
It's like Patrick Waugh back in the day at the Montreal Forum.
The difference is at this when it became clear that it was out of hand, the Habs said, look, we're giving Carey Price the night off no matter what, barring an injury.
And that no matter what was 10 goals.
Clearly. Let's head to break. When we come back, Jonas Siegel from the Canadian Press joins us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour, working on getting Jonas Siegel of the Canadian Press on the program. Great stat from Ezzy. We were talking about the Habs and the Blue Jackets game last night. The Blue Jackets, of course, demolishing the Montreal Canadiens by a 10-0 margin. Ezzy has Brandon Dubinsky in the hockey pool. 10 goals, Brandon Dubinsky managed to get 0 points. That's impressive.
And last year, I also took Artem Anisimov in my hockey pool. And he didn't have a terrible season, but he didn't exactly light it up. Now he's top three in the league in scoring.
Think maybe you're the one who's cursed?
Hmm.
Yeah.
You have to reverse the curse.
Maybe I have the curse of the Cubs on me.
That could be. The curse of the...
I've been on this show for 7 years, Drew, so...
It's likely that you're cursed at that point in time, is what you're saying? Seems reasonable. Anyways, Jonas Siegel of the Canadian Press, we're working on getting him to join us on the program. Your thoughts on that last night, you know, that the Montoya was kept in net for all 10 goals as the Blue Jackets were blowing out
the Habs. I think you could have pulled them, Drew. I think you probably – we'll ask Jonas. We got Jonas on the line here, so.
Okay, we'll go to the Hockey Show hotline there, Rory. We'll give you a second there. Fire it up. We'll stall accordingly. There we go, Rory.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
From the Canadian Press, Jonas Siegel joins us on the program. Jonas, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Guys, can you hear me now, guys?
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
I can hear you good.
Excellent. We're a Verizon commercial if we ever were one. Jonas, we were just talking before we brought you on about last night's Blue Jackets Habs game. Al Montoya in net for all 10 goals. You know, if you're a Michelle Therrien, you see the game is out of hand. You know that the Habs have a back-to-back situation where they have to play tonight. You know, does Montoya, as the backup goalie, know that, look, he's just going to get hung out to dry the entirety of that game and he sort of has to take it?
Well, what are their other options? To put Price into a game that is out of hand and doesn't matter and then risk something happening? Like, I think there's no other option but to leave him in. Like, you have this all-world goaltender on the bench. It's not his night to play. You're not winning the game. There's no incentive for them to put Carey Price into the net, and I'm sure... 100% certain that Al Montoya understands that, as painful as that would have been for him. He knows there's no let up, and, you know, unfortunately the game is 60 minutes and he knows it's not going any longer than that. But that, man, we just don't see things like that, and we don't see things like that for a team that was 9-0-1. When I saw that it was, I think, 6 or 7-0, I'm like, whoa, that's weird. And then it gets to 10 and you're just like, that never ever happens. And it's my plan this afternoon to look up how many 10-goal games there have been in the last 20 years, because, I don't know, I don't think it's all that common. Obviously, I think 2011 was the last time we saw a 10-goal game. I think it was 10-3 St. Louis. But to have a 10-0 game against the team that, you know, had been unbeaten in regulation is just jarring.
Yeah, I think I saw a tweet last night that the last 10-goal margin of victory, I don't remember what year it was, but I think the Capitals beat the Panthers 12-2 sometime in the last, you know, maybe 15 years or so, and that was the last 10-goal margin of victory.
Well, the only game that I ever saw that kind of was similar to that, the Leafs played in Atlanta one year, and they beat them 9-3, and that was, I was like, wow, 9 goals. I've never seen anything like that where they were just going in like left and right. And you look at some of the chances that Montreal gave up, these were good chances. And it's interesting to me, I think it was Nathan Beaulieu or it was one of the Habs who said the game before in which they had won, I think it was against Vancouver, they gave up 40-something shots, they beat Vancouver, and there was this sense that, you know, they needed to clean things up and that they were kind of veering in a dangerous direction. And then obviously you get beat 10-0 and that kind of pounds it home.
You know, Jonas, you mentioned the Montreal Canadiens are off to a great start, just like they were last year. They're 9-1-1 now after last night's 10-0 loss to Columbus. Looking around the entire league, which team's start has surprised you the most?
Oh, that's a good question. There's a few. First one on the negative side is Nashville. They haven't come out as well as I think probably they expected, and we expected after, you know, the summer trade where they flip Subban and they get Subban and they flip Weber, their captain. But you look at their start so far, they've not been very good. They had a big win earlier this week. But you look at what's gone on there, their penalty kill has not been very good. And between James Neal and Philip Forsberg, there's one goal. So they haven't gotten the production out of their top offensive players that I think they probably expected. I think Subban's been fine. You know, he obviously hasn't had the start that Shea Weber has had in Montreal with all the goals he scored, all the minutes he's playing. And then maybe on the other side, you look at the New York Rangers. You know, they're off to a really good start. And you look at all the little tweaks that they made in the summer. Obviously, they were the team that won the Jimmy Vesey sweepstakes, and he's gotten off to a really good start. I think he had 6 goals. And then some of the other additions that they made, you know, Michael Grabner's been important for them. I think they've got Brandon Peary playing on their fourth line. Rick Nash has come to life. They're scoring a ton. So those are two that come to mind. It's interesting to see, you know, Chicago kind of find its way after coming poorly out of the gate and obviously having all those troubles with their penalty kill. Dallas has gotten on track a little bit this week after, you know, coming slowly out of the gate. They've still got, you know, troubles and goals. So I think there's a lot of interesting situations around the league, but I think Nashville's start has probably surprised me. And then, you know, another team, St. Louis, hasn't gotten off to a great start either.
Jonas, you know, we know how Stella got her groove back, but how did Netflix help Frederik Andersen get his groove back? And are people in Toronto now breathing a sigh of relief?
They are, because it was reaching, and I don't know if it's fair what was going on, you know, because after five starts, Andersen had an .851 save percentage, and he did not look good. And obviously they handed him this 5-year contract in the summer after trading for him from Anaheim that you could question a little bit. You know, Andersen has not been, you know, a full-time number one unquestioned like they were expecting him to be. And so the pressure was really intensifying. It was really rattling Andersen. You could see, and he even said that he was really having trouble mentally. Like, it was all between the ears what was going on. And then he gave up 7 goals against the Lightning. And that was kind of the turning point where Mike Babcock said at one point, playing in Toronto, you've got to find ways to kind of distract your mind a little bit when you leave the rink. Like, you can't go home and just think hockey, hockey, hockey. You'll drive yourself crazy. So what Andersen did is he dove into Netflix, and, you know, he's been watching Suits, and he tried, you know, Stranger Things, and it's just a little tool so you're not absorbing everything that happens at the rink all the time. And it's helped. You know, his last 4 starts, he's given up 2 goals or less, and, you know, he's back on track, and Toronto is kind of breathing a sigh of relief.
By the way, Jonas, true story, I watched Problem Child 2 last night on Netflix.
I used to love those movies.
You're kidding, Eddie.
No, after the Jets game, I watched Problem Child 2.
How in the world do you have a girlfriend?
Okay, let me ask you this. I went back and watched Problem Child 1 a couple months ago. It wasn't as funny as I remember it being when I was younger.
Jesse Jonas knows what I'm talking about.
You know, I'm blown away right now.
It's a great series.
I gotta be honest. I'm completely blown
John
away.
Ritter is really good in that.
Yes,
though.
He is.
John Ritter put in a solid performance. Yeah. Whatever happened to that kid, though?
He's a problem child. They got rid of him.
That no, Jonas, that was our follow-up question. Whatever happened to the kid in Problem Child 1 and 2?
Jonas Siegel.
Probably.
Jonas Siegel is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm not sure how the show is still on the air, but that's a separate issue altogether. Jonas, scoring is up so significantly through the first month of the season so far. Do you expect it to continue, and what do you base the reasons for it on?
Probably not to this degree. I don't know. From talking to players about what's going on around the league, one, the league keeps getting younger. You look at all the teenagers and the 20-year-olds and 21-year-olds who are not only just playing but having a big impact, and you look at the way the young players are today, they're all really skillful. They're all pretty fast. So they've added, you know, this wave of speed and skill to the game that's been going up, I think, in recent years. Like, the game is trending in that direction. We see, you know, with Tampa, we saw with Pittsburgh last year how speed and skill throughout a lineup is the way to go. And so that would be my guess as to why it's been that way. Whether it continues, I'm not sure. You know, I wonder how much, you know, World Cup and training camp being affected and goaltenders not really getting off to great starts. I wonder what effect that has. Whether it keeps up at this pace, I wouldn't expect so. But I just think that the amount of young players who come in the league now and can play right away, like we have it here in Toronto, you know, you see in Winnipeg what's going on. You see, even in spots like Columbus, where I think Zach Werenski is 19, and he's putting up points and really helping their power play. So all these young guys just step in and can play, and they're not like the young players, I think, of the past, where, you know, some guys would come in and they would play in fourth lines and everything like that. Most of these guys are impact performers because they're fast and because they can make plays.
You know, Jonas, we were talking about it earlier on the show, talking about the Vancouver Canucks. It's unbelievable, but they've only scored 17 goals in 11 games, which is, you know, essentially an average of 1.5 goals a game. They've been shut out four of the last five games. Do you think it's time for Jim Benning and Trevor Linden to realize that this team isn't very good and start to rebuild it?
Yeah, I think it was probably time a while ago, but they just, from the outside in, like, it looks like they are stuck in the middle of trying to be competitive while still not having a team that is going to be competitive. They should be going young, and they should be building their team from the draft and understanding that they're going to need to be bad for a bit on purpose. But they kind of made some moves in the summer that made you think that they're not fully cognizant of that. You know, they go out and sign a 31-year-old Louis Erickson for 6 years. Like, where does he take you? What does he do? What is he? Where does he really improve your fortunes? He'll score a little bit, though he's yet to, you know, score a goal so far this year. But what is he doing for your team long term? And then you look at another move. You know, they traded, I think it was Jared McCann to Florida to get Erica Branson, who's fine, you know, but you just traded, you know, one of your younger top prospects for a guy who's 24, 25. And again, doesn't really, you know, long term, you're better off probably having that prospect on that entry-level deal. So I just feel like they need to kind of recognize what they are, and that's a team that needs to start rebuilding and do what, you know, they did in Toronto and do what they did in Buffalo and do what they did in Winnipeg to a different degree, albeit in Winnipeg. But I just think they need to come to the realization that they're not going to be competitive any longer, and then that kind of gets into a question about what you do with the Sedins, who I believe have 1, maybe 2 years left on their contracts. I don't know how you could ever trade them, but I think it would probably help them, you know, long-term if they were able to figure something out.
Jonas Siegel covers the world of hockey, also known as the NHL, for the Canadian Press. Jonas, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Well, take care, Jonas. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment, the Manitoba Moose Week in Review. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
The big thank you to all the guests who joined us on this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's Jonah Siegel of the Canadian Press, Arthur Staple of Newsday, Ted Wyman from the Winnipeg Sun, and Dave Maloney, the New York Rangers radio analyst. In case you missed any of those interviews, in case you missed any of the show, it'll be available for download on iTunes, and you can always find it, of course, on our website, illegalcurve.com.
It's been a nice little Saturday, Drew.
Nice little Saturday. You've been a little under the weather. We have to talk about something, Ezzy. It's the interminable coffee microwaving throughout the course of the show. And I know we've spoken about it before, but Dave, how many times did he leave this? Did he leave the studio?
Today was probably a new high. I think it was at least five times.
Five or six times.
So hold on, you're actually going to make fun of my OCD?
I don't believe that.
Not when you say it like that.
First of all, I don't believe that it's an OCD.
Because I have the worst OCD, but go on.
No, you don't really.
I do, but go ahead. Go on.
But you know the coffee, which you know I understand your want to drink warm coffee. But you know you can microwave it for longer than you currently do so that it stays warmer longer than always you having to get up and going to microwave it.
Drew, let's get to the Manitoba Moose.
I was just going to say, let's move
review.
Along.
I mean, just, you know, let me warm up my coffee. Let's move on
Fine,
here.
We'll move on. I just wanted to bring that forward. The Moose won three games in a row. They played tonight against the Cleveland Barons. Is that correct? Are they still the Barons?
No.
No?
Yeah, I thought you were joking.
No, what are they now?
Monsters.
The Lake Erie Monsters? Is that what they are?
No, they were the Lake Erie Monsters last year.
Dave is the Baron of River Heights, though.
So they changed from Lake Erie to back to Cleveland?
Yes, they're the Cleveland Monsters.
Okay, fair enough. Obviously,
who's AHL?
And Dave still watches them play, but he's actually afraid of monsters. So
it's true.
Why would they change from Lake Erie to Cleveland?
I think so because some people would be like, "Where is Lake Erie?" So just to have that city recognition. Plus, you know, if Cleveland would have won the World Series, you would have had Cleveland winning the AHL Calder Cup last season.
As the Lake Erie Monsters.
The Lake Erie Monsters, but still Cleveland.
Yeah.
And then you would have had the Cleveland Cavaliers, and you would have had the Cleveland Indians. So you would have had three teams win championships.
Fair Cleveland enough. Rocks.
Excellent. Go. Good work there, Drew Carey. Anyways, the Cleveland Monsters in town, they played on Thursday night. The Moose won the game handily, I believe, 7-3, was it?
Well, two of the goals were empty net.
Okay, two of the goals were empty net. Moose 5-3-0-1 in nine games played thus far this year. Dave, you watch the Moose, you cover the Moose as close as anybody in this city. What are your impressions been about the Moose players? Keep in mind, of course, so many of the guys who started the season with the Moose are now regulars in the Jets lineup.
You know what? I think it's a testament to Coach Vincent importing Coach Maurice's structure into the Moose team. And I think that it's made the transition. Now, obviously, you have guys like Marco Dano and Andrew Kopp who played the majority of the season last year with the Jets anyways. So they're familiar with that, you know, seamless transition into the Jets structure. But I think he's just committed to ensuring that every player has that ability to be able to say, okay, you're going to get called up, you're going to be able to play. You know, it's going to be a pretty seamless transition. And I think we've seen that. You know, Marco Dano went into the lineup, there wasn't a problem. Andrew Kopp went in the lineup, there wasn't a problem. Nick Petan is on the second line. I mean, think about that. Nick Petan went from playing with the Moose the night before to second line with Blake Wheeler. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a pretty strong testament to what Vincent is embracing with the Moose that he's managed to get everyone on the Moose squad to buy in. And then you see the fruits of that transitioning into for the Jets. So it's been very good. The Moose have, you know, been pretty good on the ice. They've played well this season. I believe they're fourth in the Central because it goes based on winning percentage in the AHL for the standings. So I think they have the most points, or they're tied for the most points in the Central. But they're statistically they
played more games or whatever.
That's right. Yeah. So they're right now they're fourth in the Central. And they've got a lot of depth, and you see it with guys like, look, let's be realistic. They've had so many call-ups. Traditionally, this team should be ravaged at this point, and instead they still have quite a number of players who, on any given night, you know, can play extremely well. So you've still got, you know, Chase DeLeo. You've got Quinton Howden. Quinton Howden's got six goals in nine games with the Moose. You've got Brendan Lemieux, and you've got Jack Roslovic. Now, those are the four. I mean, maybe not Howden as much, but those three guys previously are really interesting players. And people want to rush. And it's funny because I had a guy tweet at me about, you know, bringing someone up. And it was either Lemieux or Roslovic, but I think it was Lemieux. And I said, you know, sometimes you just have to season a steak and let it sit there for a bit before you rush it into the NHL. And I just think, like, too often people are just like, oh, man, this guy has, you know, 6 goals and we need to bring him up immediately. Now, maybe those 3 of those goals were empty net goals. You don't sometimes know these things.
The context behind it. The numbers don't show the whole picture.
Exactly. So, you know, again, like I said, Jack Roslovic, to me, is a player you leave with the Moose. He has the tools to be a really dynamic player with the Jets eventually, but I don't see any value in rushing him into an NHL role. And similarly with Brendan Lemieux. Brendan Lemieux, we've got to remember, missed all of training camp with an injury that he sustained in the Young Stars tournament in Penticton, BC. Comes to the gets assigned to the Moose. Slowly but surely getting his legs, but the kid has unbelievable ability, and you will see him in a Jets uniform in front of the net without question in the coming years, because he is exactly
might even be this year.
It could be this year. I'm not like Brendan Lemieux of all the players, because if you remember, he was the last cut of last year's training camp.
Sure.
So Brendan Lemieux is the type of player that this team could use in front of the net on the power play. I put the video on our Instagram and I put the video out on Twitter. He will stand there after a practice is over for I don't know how long and just take shots. It doesn't matter who, doesn't matter the velocity, and he's just redirecting them in front of the net.
Just tip, tip, tip,
tip, tip, tip, tip, tip. And he does it. And again, it's not like he's missing, you know, 3 and hits 1. He is 1 after the other after the other. So there is a nice pipeline for the Jets, even despite the fact that they've already gone to that well numerous times.
You're saying the well isn't dry, and that's a very appealing factor for the Jets, is that the guys who are performing for the Moose, you know, aren't guys who are what you would describe as AHL veterans who don't have an NHL career ahead of them. You guys, Roslovic leads the team in points with 8 points in 9 games. Quinton Howden, who's still a younger player, in that he still has designs on, hopefully one day from his perspective, being more of an NHL regular, has got 7 points in 9 games. He's not a guy like, you know, we remember back in some of the Chicago Wolves always used to have guys who are just dominant AHL players who had no hope of really ever being NHL players again.
Yeah, and I think like the fact is that if you recall our history, you know, from just a couple of years back, what were the Jets doing? They were calling up Patrice Cormier. They were calling up John Albert. They were calling up guys who were pretty much career AHLers who to fill a quick role or a quick need, as opposed to, you know, a guy like, a Nick Petan or a Andrew Kopp or a Marco Dano, who could potentially supplant, you know, a roster player like an Alexander Burmistrov. So I think it's a testament to what the team has done in terms of their drafting ability, you know, getting these guys onto the team.
And this is the type of depth, Dave, that True North has wanted since the Jets came back, right? And your point is very well made. I mean, the Manitoba Moose could make the playoffs last year. They were one of the worst teams in the AHL last year, but, you know, they've got off to a good start. Drew, you mentioned 5-3-1, and, you know, Jack Roslovic was actually a guy before the season that I thought was going to go back and play in the Ontario Hockey League. Will not go back because he played in NCAA the previous year, but I certainly thought that he might be a candidate to play one more year of junior, but he's leading the league in points. So this all bodes well for the Jets and the Moose. The Moose have a combination of young players who have aspirations to play for the Jets and veteran guys who have NHL experience, whether that's, as we mentioned, a Quinton Howden, a Scott Glennie, a Marco Dano, or Andrew Kopp. Obviously, those guys are up with the Jets now, but, you know, it's a good mix of youth and veterans, and, you know, certainly more exciting for fans this year with the team winning more games. So, you know, good on the Moose, good on Zinger, good on Pascal Vincent for putting on a better product this year.
The only thing I'll say quickly is the defensive pipeline might be a little bit smaller, and one thing that Jets fans may want to come out and see Moose games is to watch Eric Comrie. The guy is worth the price of admission. He's an excellent goaltender of the future.
The Moose and the Monsters tonight, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. That's it for the Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to all of our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news. Don't forget about all the Moose news on the website. That's IllegalCurve.com. The show is available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and again on Illegal Curve. Big props to producer Rory behind the board doing a great job. For Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.